It's 12:45 a.m. in the dark and murky waters of the White Sea, and you're listening to Night Call. Welcome to Night Call, a podcast to keep you company on those strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York, and with me on the other end of the line in California, it is...
Okay, fine, I'll go first. It's Tess Lynch, and with me is...
Molly Lambert. Hey, everybody.
Hi. Welcome to the holiday season. We're officially in the holiday season, the real hygge season. Is that how you pronounce
it? I always
that?
Thought it was Higgy, and then that commercial... where it like walks you through the pronunciation really kind of shook me.
Higa?
But I don't, he is it Higa or like Huga?
Huga?
Huga. It's a hookah.
Huga is what I would trust because it makes the least amount
exactly.
of sense. And it's a Scandinavian language.
It means just like cozy, right?
Yeah. It has like a meaning though that's deeper than cozy. It's a Danish and Norwegian word for a mood of coziness and comfortable conviviality with feelings of wellness and contentment.
That's great. I'm going to completely botch it, but there's like the Japanese concept where it's like you're both successful in your career and happy with your personal life and like everything's working out. It's like basically Nirvana, but it's like earthly Nirvana. I can't
there's
remember what it's
There's a German version of Hygge.
What is it?
Gemütlich.
Oh, yeah.
Gemütlich.
Gemütlich.
What are your guys' favorite cozy things to do during the holiday season where it's about 85 degrees here in Los Angeles?
Oh, it sure is. I went to the Hollywood Christmas Parade yesterday. It was the 89th year of this celebration.
I've never been to, I don't even know about
okay,
the Hollywood
I had never
Christmas
been to
parade.
It before. I knew about it. It's like a local parade and they show it on TV. I was trying to explain it to my friend. I had just gone to the Doodah Parade, and then I realized I like to go to parades, apparently. And I was like, the Doodah Parade is to the Rose Parade as the Hollywood Christmas Parade is to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. It is like an extremely bootleg Christmas parade. Mm-hmm. It is so bootleg. You would not believe.
Tell us why.
Well, I don't exactly know why, but it's kind of amazing. It's like, first of all, it happens now.
Yeah.
Before it's even December. And I explained to someone that that's so they can film it and show it later.
Oh, my God.
Guys, don't you know that the holiday shopping season starts the day, like Thanksgiving Day?
Right.
It's Christmas.
And this is like they filmed this. They filmed this parade. It was hosted by Eric Estrada. Mm-hmm. And they got a real late start.
Oh, no.
And it's basically like if Mardi Gras were like a quarter full.
Right. If Mardi Gras sucked.
No, because it doesn't suck. I mean, it's like...
You can't like have a beer while you're watching
no,
the
you
Hollywood
can't.
Christmas
you can't.
Parade.
Definitely you cannot. But you can like buy an LED wand and sit on the... It's like not crowded. If what you want out of a parade is to be in a not crowded place...
Okay.
It's a good parade for that.
What were the floats like?
The floats are what make it kind of janky. There was like one giant inflatable that I saw that was a Cat in the Hat balloon. And it was actually amazing to see a giant inflatable balloon in real life and made the whole thing worth it. Uh-huh. But it was also the slowest parade I've ever
it's
seen.
It's LA, baby.
And I kind of like walked down the line before it started to see what it was. And the main thing that I did see, first of all, it started with like a million cops doing a sort of like terrifying demonstration of power where mm-hmm. they like ride motorcycles around in crazy curlicues in formations. But then it was weird.
Good to know they have a lot of time to practice their moves.
Right. It's like first all the police cars drive through and then all the fire trucks drive through. And then after that came a fleet of cars from TV and film.
Nice.
Because it's
so
a
So that's
Hollywood
where you saw
Christmas
the two
parade.
DeLoreans.
So that's where I saw the two DeLoreans and just like many, but it was all like, I think, in advertisement for a company that will rent you famous cars or doppelgangers
there
of famous
are
cars.
Two DeLoreans that are frequently seen around the Hollywood and Los Feliz areas.
Yeah, I'd also seen the Blues Brothers car before for sure. And I just, in my mind, was like, there's just guys who have a Blues Brothers car because that was a thing in Providence. Mm-hmm. But this is more of a like for-profit Blues Brothers venture. So yeah, it's a really silly parade, and I saw about an hour of it, and that was about it. But if you like free public experiences and spectacle, mm-hmm. I think the big star was Ernie Hudson from Ghostbusters, was like the mayor of the parade.
Whoa. That sounds kind of good, actually.
It was. I mean, yeah. It's not bad. It's like true to its roots. I think it was like the first place Sonny and Cher ever performed. Like the fact that it's almost 90 years old to me makes it, you know, it's hilariously old. But it is not like a very big thing.
I mean, are there any new parades? Like, what's the most recent major parade that was started? Because it's really hard to think about parades in our modern era. Like, it's easy to imagine being like, yeah, a parade. That's what we'll do to
the Doodah Parade
the time
was started in the 70s, and the Doodah Parade is like the most 70s parade because it was started as sort of a Rose Parade parody parade. And that parade is also free, and I guess most parades are free. It's free to like, it's like $10 a person to participate, and anyone can, and it's all super weird stuff. But my friend was like, the theme of this parade is everybody smokes weed. And I was like, yes, that's definitely what connects all the floats in this parade.
I feel like those are two incongruous themes, though. Like a parade is like a kind of like fake military exercise. Like, I don't know.
What, and getting fucked up is against it?
Yeah, it feels like getting in order or doing formations or like carrying.
Well, my friend, should come to New Orleans.
8, 5, 12, 12, 15.
Today's episode is brought to you by Canvas People. The holidays are just around the corner. How's your holiday shopping going? We at Nightcall know that it can be really hard to find something really special for the people that you love in your life for the holidays, something that's not just right off the shelf or the gift that everybody else is getting. So for a really special gift for the special people in your life, you've got to check out Canvas People. Canvas People prints your favorite memories and photos on canvas and turns them into unique works of art that add a beautiful touch to your home. You know, now we take so many pictures with our phones, we capture so many amazing memories, and, you know, we don't really necessarily have photo albums to keep them in anymore and places to really display those photos and those memories in our homes. And Canvas People is a great way to showcase some of those photos that might otherwise not have a home. They're totally unique because it's your photo, and the prints are beautiful. They're great for decor. You can hang them up in your home, frame them. They're like pieces of art. And now, as a special for a very limited holiday offer, canvaspeople.com is offering their popular 11 by 14 photo canvases for free. That's right, for free. These normally sell for $69.99, but for this week only, you'll pay nothing. Just cover shipping and handling. To get your free canvas, text CALL, C-A-L-L, to 484848. All you have to do is pay shipping and handling. This offer won't last, so text CALL, C-A-L-L, to 484848. That's CALL to 484848. Message and data rates may apply.
12, 9, 20, 5, 14, 5, 18, 19.
I did also go to Mardi Gras because it turns out I'm such a parade head.
Yeah. And Disneyland, you saw a bunch of parades.
I think I was like missing the Disneyland Christmas parade is why I wanted to see the Hollywood Christmas parade, which is less impressive, but also free. Mardi Gras is like truly an amazing parade and like a crazy giant spectacle of being overwhelmed by just like human beings' capacity to make weird things
and be excited.
And the floats aren't corporate. My boyfriend is from New Orleans. He was pointing that out yesterday. He was like, those floats aren't corporate, they're like satirical and sometimes very weird. Because they like, I went right around the election and it was like very strange. There were like politics themed floats and they were just creepy because they're just like giant, you know, the ways that like giant effigies of politicians are creepy. I feel like they do that more in England. They love to do.
Well, we've imported that. We've totally the Trump like balloon. Explicitly.
You know the Genesis video the with Trump. The scary puppets that are all the
Oh, they love them some scary puppet symbols.
It was like that. It was like some there was like a Bernie float and a Hillary float and a Trump float and they were all like mocking them, you know? And then there's just some weird things about Mardi Gras because it's so old. That some of it is just very feels very like you're in like an Eyes Wide Shut parade, you know? Where you're like, this is going to end with like some kind of a really cool like pagan thing that we all do because it feels very like older than time or like It's great. I recommend it. But it's like many days of parades. And what's cool about it is everybody gets like the week off from school.
We should revisit this when it's actually Mardi Gras season. But this sounds
good. I call Mardi Gras. Good.
Corporate sponsors, send us to Mardi Gras, please.
Oh, yeah. Put us on a float.
We should just have like a giant phone, like a nightscape behind us.
Oh, yeah. What's
and, like,
your dream float?
Phone.
What would you like to ride on? Tess, a giant phone?
Well, no. I was thinking like a landline. And I do kind of like that idea. But I really like the idea of being inside a clam that open and shuts.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's cute.
I was going to say a moon pie.
Oh, that's a good one. I would like something I could close myself up in if I got shy.
When I went to Mardi Gras, I saw Solange was the Grand Marshal, I think it's called, of a parade. And she was in a giant shoe.
Oh, nice.
It was a parade whose theme is a giant high heel shoe that's like the women's parade. And it's the best parade.
Is that like her the crew?
Yeah, the crew is muses, and it's like the all-female crew, and their thing is like a high-heeled shoe. So she rode in a giant high-heeled shoe, and she actually lost her wedding or engagement ring.
Oh, no.
Because she was doing throws all night.
Yeah.
And at some point, like, accidentally her ring came off while she was, like, throwing beads and stuff.
Man.
Emily, what's your dream float?
I was in a float when I was a kid. This is like a very early childhood memory.
What?
But there's a kind of funky parade in Seattle called the Seafair Parade.
Ooh.
It's kind of like well known around there, isn't it? But my mom was a part of a Habitat for Humanity float, and they made like a house, like a big kind of crazy house float. And I was in it. Like I rode in the float and kind of was like in one of the top like little windows
in the
like
attic
waving from
of the
window
float.
yeah it kind of was this surreal thing of like a trailer house being taken down the road like the kind of weird dreamy thing of being in a house but it's moving sort of Wizard
cool.
of Oz-y. But I had a very cool memory of
when
that
it,
so I guess any kind of house thing they I think at the Thanksgiving Day parade they have like an old Mother Hubbard float that's like the shoe house.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that one looks
anything
fun.
Anything that's like a miniature golf thing.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of British puppets.
Speaking of British people and their puppets.
Yeah.
And the holidays.
This topic came as a suggestion to us on Twitter because I was sort of on this kick that we had been from doing the Big Chill episode and then talking about Phantom of the Opera, and there are a lot of things that could qualify as 80s themed themes, but they're like sensations where I can't really understand why they were so popular.
Guys, Big Chill is great. I don't know.
It's great. I'm not saying it's not great, but I'm saying,
no,
like, can you
that
imagine that movie being
phenomenon.
Like a sensation?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's hard to imagine any movie that's like about real people.
Right. Just being
have superpowers, or are animated, being like a huge, huge hit.
So we had a suggestion from a Twitter. They did suggest do it talking about charity songs, which I was just like, oh yeah, that's one of these other things where when I think about any of those songs, like We Are the World, or in this case, Do They Know It's Christmas, charting, especially in those days when charting was based off of buying a single and radio play, I guess. I can't imagine those songs being so, like, who would buy the single of Do They Know It's Christmas?
Wow.
I mean, I'm glad they did.
A lot
I'm glad
of people
that,
sure
it was for
did.
A good cause.
Yes. I think, here's what I think. Let's talk sports again, like we did last week.
We love talking sports.
We love to talk sports. Spot Hort's take. It's like a super team. It's like, just because you put all of the greatest players in history on a team, like they might be a terrible team. There's something about the idea of like putting all these stars on a track together.
Well, it's also interesting because if it's for charity, if you say no and then that becomes public knowledge, it's obviously
you're
like
shamed.
And maybe rightfully because you're like, well, it was recorded in a day, so it literally took like a couple of hours of time. And then it did generate a bunch of money, but it also created one of the worst and most offensive songs.
It depends who is running the charity and where the money actually goes. I knew it was a Bob Geldof joint.
Yeah, it was a Bob
and
Geldof
Midge
joint.
Yuri. Let's go, Yuri.
And. It is a terrible song.
It's so bad.
Do you guys think it's better or worse than the 2014 version about Ebola? that
I think,
is like,
oh, so I was just
bad.
Listening to the 2014 version. It's so funny.
There was a 2014 version?
Yes, and it was
that's
about
the
Ebola.
One with Ellie Goulding and
oh, I don't even know about this.
Martin
they kept a lot of the lyrics.
I mean, it's like,
I think there's something about that song in particular. What makes it so offensive is that it's like so colonialist.
Oh, it's so colonialist.
It's like the craziest, yeah. And it's the thing of like, you're like, you should know better than this by now.
Yeah.
The kind of the rampant cluelessness feels shocking now. Also, I mean, it is one of those things that feels like it would be a song in a South Park episode without a single lyric changed.
Exactly.
You know, we all spent time in the 80s, which is what differentiates us.
We did
us.
Our time in the 80s.
That's what differentiates us from the young millennials. 'Cause the 80s are the weirdest decade by far to me. Like, when you look at things from the 80s, they're so weird because they purport to be wholesome.
Yeah.
It's like trying to like reset things to the 50s and
Well, it's
way.
A bizarro 50s.
It's a bizarro 50s, but things are things are so dystopian and weird, and that was very apparent.
What's strange is that I remember this song, obviously it still plays, but I remember it as if I were there when it came out, but I was 1 year old.
When did it come out?
84.
Okay, I just remember like the SNL parody.
Yeah.
I feel like I was more aware of the parodies than the thing itself.
Well, there's this weird thing where I feel like if someone plays the like bells, you know, of the like ding, 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 you know, like any kind of like Christmassy bell or a whistle or a hand clap, like I will listen to the song, you know, I'll give it a chance.
It's like a heavily synthesized version, though.
Yes.
And I actually think that musically this song isn't that bad.
Right. Just the lyrics are the problem.
It's the lyrics that are terrible. And then, okay, so the thing, going back to the super team thing, I think the super team thing works in sports because you're tuning into an event and you're like watching to see how something plays out in real time.
Right. Like it's an all-star.
So now I feel like instead of these songs, we don't really get charity songs anymore, but like we have the big like 50 people, 50 big stars singing at the Grammys or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is like, you don't really want to ever like go back and watch that again or listen
right,
to it again.
But they're counting
like,
on people
to be watching it,
tuning in to see
just,
it live.
Yeah, the looky-loo aspect of it. And that kind of stuff, I think it's usually kind of boringly done on the Grammys. I mean, there's some exceptions, and sometimes the combinations are so wackadoo that you kind of just have to watch with your jaw open. But one of my earliest writing jobs was recapping The Voice for the AV Club, like when The Voice was new. And I had been doing American Idol stuff before then. And I was like, well, this show is fun because they have the battle rounds where people are just sing fighting. And that's always kind of entertaining, like when people are just in real time trying to one-up each other.
I did love the battle rounds.
Yeah.
And that's what people like about charity singles. I think you're right, is there's an element of like all these stars trying
competing.
To be like, who will be the memorable person?
Yeah. But I think it's no VH1 Divas.
Yeah, that's true. <You know? laughs> Just because you mentioned The Voice, I have to say, like, in the early days of The Voice, I was like, I'll give this show a shot. And I really liked the battle rounds, but that show was such a pale, like, awful substitute for American Idol.
You guys have strong Idol and
super
The Voice.
Strong
this
feelings.
Is like when we talked about astrology the other week and I just dropped out for 10 minutes when you guys talked about something.
You are not into
I was
any
like,
of this,
I don't think
I
this has ever happened before that I've stopped talking for that long on the podcast.
I mean, it feels of a piece with them. I mean,
yeah,
it all,
for
and,
sure.
And American
all
Idol like, also has that creepy thing of like trying to recapture something from the 50s,
right.
Like American
they
Bandstand.
They all exist
or
in the
like
same
that.
Like Paul Verhoeven universe.
Yeah.
That informed like, us all as people.
Bob Geldof, by the way, in 2010, said that he was responsible for two of the worst songs in history, and one was Do They Know It's Christmas, and the other is We Are the World.
Really?
He,
what
like,
about,
admitted it.
What about I Don't Like Mondays? Taking no responsibility.
We Are the World is incredible. I was more aware of We Are the World when I was a kid than Do
Which
They
came
Know
That first?
It's Christmas.
That's a good question. I was just going
to
say.
Do They Know It's Christmas, I think, came first.
Here's what I was saying to you guys also in an email, is that I feel like I knew for some reason that the race to get a number one for Christmas is a huge thing in England.
Yeah.
Much more so than in America, I think. And it's always like, it's sort of like a Eurovision-y thing where it's like, you know, the favorite and like, That's somebody funny. Will do, and it's always people doing like sentimental covers of songs. I feel like Adele has just like won with, if she ever has a song out, it wins.
Yeah.
For
probably
many
like
years.
Her and Sam Smith have just been owning
I
that
feel like
corner
Ed
for...
Sheeran like really wanted it
oh,
one
yeah.
year and got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there was a year when everybody just got totally one-upped by a song from a tea commercial that had
really?
Like a cuddly polar bear.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. It was like everybody was like, no, the song by like the No Name band from like the cuddly polar bear tea commercial that all of England has fallen in love with. It captured their heart like the Crazy Frog.
The funny thing about the most recent Do They Know It's Christmas, did you say it was 2014?
Yes.
I guess it would be like on a 4 year, yeah, is that it feels even more British than the first one for some reason. A lot of the people who pop up on it, you kind of do this weird thing of like, who's that person? Because you know them from like exactly one song, like whatever the one song was that came to the States. So like the guy from Pompeii, Bastille, the song was called Pompeii. See, I can't even remember. Yeah. And he has a really distinctive voice, but I've never heard another song by them ever again. And so he pops up on the song and I'm like, who's that? I know
would
that
you call
voice.
It a who's who of who's?
It's a who. Yes, exactly.
Oh, because
that's
that
a great, great segue.
If you like we do, talking about minor British pop stars that other people might not care about, but you obsessively follow the details
like,
of their
is
career.
Is Jessie J on this?
Yes,
Jessie J.
Sure.
Isn't she dating Channing Tatum?
Oh, wow.
Is that
yeah,
true?
Yeah, and everyone's talking about how she looks just like Jenna Dewan.
Yikes.
Yikes.
Yeah, it is. And she like went on a Chinese The Voice and won.
No, she was on either X Factor
yes.
or The Voice.
And she
here,
didn't she
and
have
she
a cast?
Was in a, cast.
Yes,
she was in a cast.
You remember it?
That
it's
was
real.
When I. That was when I recapped.
Yeah, it was amazing.
If you have been riveted by this discussion of Jessie J's cast, you will love Who Weekly, a podcast from Lindsay Weber and Bobby Finger that we all love.
Love it so much. I can actually say that it's better for celebrities where you just keep seeing their name. So I put celebrities in air quotes, but you can't see it. But there are all of these people where you just keep seeing them mentioned and you know that you'll never find out who they are.
Yeah.
And then just having someone else acknowledge that they're a who, you're like, yeah, I don't have to know who they are. They're a who.
I think it's a great pairing if you're a big Blind Items reader or Crazy Days and Nights reader, like to have both of those info streams going in tandem, because then you kind of can understand who half the people are that he talks about that otherwise you'd be like, who is that?
Yeah, if you, like me, are deeply invested in the careers of stars like Bella Thorne.
Mm-hmm. Bella Thorne.
Vanessa Hudgens, the Christmas Switch.
Is Vanessa Hudgens a who?
Well, she's...
I don't count her as a who.
This would be a great Who Weekly debate because she's not a who, but she's sort of... She just did a Netflix Christmas movie, which will bring us back to our main topic again, about a princess. It's like she and a princess switch places or something.
Uh-huh.
Within the Christmas movie, they acknowledge the Netflix Christmas movie's universe.
Whoa.
There's a moment in this Vanessa Hudgens Netflix Christmas movie where they watch another Netflix Christmas movie and she's like, I love these movies.
Does that are you arguing that that makes her more of a who, or is that just a separate thing
it's
entirely?
It's definitely, there's something.
Like if you decided that you can corner the Netflix Christmas movie market.
I mean,
then
a lot
maybe,
of people, it is a route for an actress that I respect. A lot of people do a Christmas movie
How
in their career.
How many Netflix movies has she been in now? Because she was in that one rave movie, XOXO.
Well, she's amazing in Spring Breakers, is the thing.
That's why I'm
like
she's not a who.
Do more serious
acting. She wasn't in that movie. I'm sorry for besmirching her name. I think that was Sarah Hyland who was in that.
Never mind. There's a who.
Okay. Can I share my one favorite tidbit from the Wikipedia entry for Do They Know It's Christmas, though, before we move on?
Yes, of course.
I think it was Simon Le Bon who, like, showed up, like, having not, like, just come from a party, like, not having slept the night before, and, like,
yeah, how many people recording that song knew it was Christmas?
Yeah, right.
Or, like, were aware of much at
there
all.
There may not be snow
were,
in Africa, but there was snow at Simon Le Bon's party.
Yeah. He dumped out a bag of cocaine on the table, and everybody partook. And then fast forward to, I think, the one that was recorded in the 90s. And it was like Damon Albarn was there, but he wasn't even a part of the track. He was just there to serve everybody tea.
AKA cocaine is what you're saying.
I love him.
We all love Damon Albarn. That might be the official Night Call crush.
I mean.
Is it?
I think we might all agree on that one.
Yeah.
He has the boyish charm.
He a cutie.
We like British novelty songs.
is
British, like anything that they're probably sick of in England, like I'm like, bring it to me. I will take it.
Yeah.
But there is some stuff that's like not quite good enough to actually cross over that I'll listen to. But I feel like lucky that we are spared it, like the work of Cheryl Tweedy.
What is the best Christmas song of
all
time?
That's what I wanted to say.
Feliz Navidad. There's no other answer.
Do you like Christmas music?
I know it's probably not cool, but yeah, I do. There are certain
sentimental
ones.
It is cool to say that it's not cool that you like it.
I just do like it. I've been listening to the country station out here, Go Country 105.1, because they started playing the Christmas music like about 3 weeks ago, if memory serves. But there are a few that make me like deeply depressed. I'll just turn those off. Like,
so you like a happy Christmas song, like not a melancholy?
I like the zippy ones.
What about you, Emily?
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Phil Spector Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of like it doesn't ever get old.
Classique.
But my real favorite, and this is just like a sentimental favorite, is a Steven Eady recording of Let It Snow.
Do you like the Christmas music?
Do I like the Christmas music in general?
Yeah.
Not really. I'm not a big Christmas music fan. There's like this one tape that we just have had since I was a kid that has, it's kind of a very 60s, 70s Christmas tape, hence the Steven Eady. And there's like Julie Andrews singing a ballad, a Christmas ballad. I can't remember. And it's just a very kind of like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir is on it. And that one I just have a soft spot for because every single one of those tracks I just like have imprinted on my brain. But I'm not a big, like I'm not one of those people. I think a lot of people are like Thanksgiving's over, time to break out the Christmas music, time to play Mariah Carey like five times a day.
That's my answer.
And I'm not, I like that one.
Well, I mean, it's a good one. I feel like everybody in the modern day, if there's a contemporary pop star who is trying to do a Christmas track, everybody is kind of secretly just trying to best the Mariah
song,
which
you
and
cannot
I feel like
do.
Nobody's
I don't
ever
even like Mariah
do
that much because I'm like generally a little lukewarm on the divas, but for Christmas, I make an exception.
You like a Christmas diva?
I do like
a Christmas diva.
I love Mariah. She's my favorite ever.
I will
fight this forever.
I don't know.
I'm so glad the Lambs got the glitter soundtrack to the original A Star Is Born. Got it to number one. Good job, Lamely. As a Lambert, I identify with the Lambs. I like Christmas music. I was going to say I like the melancholy Christmas music. I like the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh,
album.
I mean, that's unbeatable. I also just rewatched Charlie Brown Christmas a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving with my kids. And it was like the hardest thing in the world to convince them to watch it. They seemed to think it was from like the 1600s.
It was to them. Yeah.
They were like,
aww,
are these...
That makes me sad.
Are these cartoons? And I was like, yeah.
They're like, why are they flat?
They don't look like cartoons. Like, why is their hair that way? And I was like, you guys watch, like, you know, Captain Underpants. Like,
it's
why
experimental.
Is his hair that way? Yeah, it's experimental.
It's hard. It must be hard to want to, like, pass on those traditions and then your kids are like,
Oh, God, it's so hard. I mean, I just remember my dad doing the same thing. So
yeah.
He was like, no, it's not cool.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm a very young mom.
I love the Peanuts.
Yeah.
Like all hip people.
Hip millennials love Peanuts.
Well, it wasn't contemporary for us either, but I feel like everybody in our generation loves the Charlie Brown Christmas and all the Charlie Brown movies in general, right?
I mean, I think on some level we have like a deep need to forge tradition, and that is one of them.
It's
that we're
true.
All like,
sure.
We agree that there
but
are
I
like
mean,
certain
I...
things that are good. That's one of them. Sesame Street's one. Things that you would like want your children to be into because they're like, they teach fine lessons and they're.
They teach fine lessons.
They're hygge. They're very hygge.
About the flat 2D animation thing, I was at a screening of Mary Poppins Returns.
Oh, shit.
And. And there's a part where they do kind of like try to redo the supercalifragilistic sequence,
yes.
Like with where they go into an animated world. And even being me, like a person who grew up with 2D animation and does not find it alarming, I was like, children are going to be terrified and know what to make of this, especially because the style of the animation, they totally go back to like the 60s Disney style with like these kind of spindly like animal characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like they have the penguins there and it's very cute. It's fun, but it's like kids are not going to be able to wrap their heads around the dimensionality of this.
Well, I just want to say that we had Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is a terrifying children's movie that we also all love, that goes in the Damon Albarn Night Call Venn diagram.
We should have like a virtual Hall of Fame or something where we can just
a list
like
of things we all
agree
are the best.
It's just a website, but it's a museum for things we like that are old.
Wait, I want to know about Mary Poppins. Can you tell us since you saw it already? Was it good? Will it bring the musical back again?
The songs are cute when you're listening to them, and they all sort of run together for me. I had thought that Lin-Manuel Miranda like wrote on them or something, but I don't think he did. I actually have to fact check on that. But it's cute. I mean, she's great in it. Like, it kind of feels, I'm like a little bittersweet about the fact that like finally it feels like there's been justice for Emily Blunt.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like she's kind of a genius because I was like, Mary Poppins is more famous than Black Widow. Like, she she made a right choice by holding out on all the superheroes until she got fucking Mary Poppins.
Because
that franchise will go forever.
And she's so perfect in it. Like, she's just picture perfect in
she's
it.
Practically
and, like,
perfect.
She is practically perfect in every way. And my weird hot take while I was watching it that was kind of crossing my mind, and I was like, I don't really think this, do I? But I think I do. It's like, is Mary Poppins hot? Like,
well,
as a character?
She's buttoned up, so, you know, I mean,
yeah,
like, in some
but
level,
was she hot as Julie Andrews? Because, like, I, you know,
Julie
such a
Andrews
childhood thing.
Is hot, but yeah. Julie Andrews was, like, desexualized in all of her movies, which is right. Why then there's a movie where she shows her boobs later on.
Why'd you whisper that?
Because it's like, you
don't
feel,
let anybody know.
It's like, isn't there a movie also where you see, like, Mary Tyler Moore's boobs, where you're like, there's something that feels like you're seeing, like, your friend's mom's boobs that you're not, like, supposed to see, you know? Julie Andrews, I don't feel like it's supposed to be hot in Mary Poppins, but I don't think anyone's supposed to be
I think
hot
that,
in Mary
well,
Poppins.
Well, she's. I was just trying to like think about the appeal of Mary Poppins because it's really peculiar, right? She's like super hard ass, but she also is like a total hedonist. Like, I remember in the original one where she makes the children's medicine taste better.
I get it mixed up in my mind with Mrs. Pigglewiggle.
Oh, I love Mrs. Pigglewiggle too.
Yeah. Is there any politics in this one? Because I feel like what makes the first one pretty good is there's some politics in it that are okay.
So in this one, what Jane, she's the girl. She's played by Emily Mortimer in this one. She is a labor organizer.
Of course. this is a thing about Disney movies that I've noticed is there are like a bunch of Disney movies about labor organizing, but
Christopher Robin
union.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like the Christopher Robin movie is all about like benefits for workers and
yeah, that's what Newsies is about too.
Crazy,
and I was like, this is very weird because this is not in line
right,
with
yeah.
how y'all like to behave.
I think Mary Poppins, there is this kind of like...
She's just mysterious.
She's mystical because someone... You guys probably didn't ever watch Super Nanny. It's interesting because it kind of like is a horror movie for parents in a way of like you could hire someone who like presumably has no children because they've got all this time. And then they show up and they're a better parent than you.
Yeah.
And they like... They almost have this like... magical ability to transfix your children.
Well, it's also like they're somebody.
But they don't form an attachment to your children that would keep them there forever. Otherwise, it would be just like a real horror movie. It's just interesting to think about when you're like Mary Poppins, like she came and she like bewitched the children and was like really good at like parenting them basically and then was like, peace.
But isn't it also like this fantasy of like she has no inner life? She's just there to like serve.
Yeah. And the children are like, they grow up to think they imagined everything that they
right.
like all their
wait is there an does it imply that she might just be a figment
she's
of
a
their
phantom.
Imagination so it is a horror movie. Well, it was funny they buried the Nutcracker because I was like, they must really be betting it all on Mary Poppins.
Yeah, Nutcracker's real bad. I had to see both of those.
Speaking of Emily Blunt, we got an email referencing The Devil Wears Prada and about our last week's episode.
People got takes on You've Got
People
Mail.
People got takes. This night email comes from Stephen. I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which was a series of mostly empty strip malls surrounding an economically depressed downtown in the 90s. I distinctly remember when we got our first Starbucks in Barnes & Noble and how excited the adults in my life were as a result. I remember my mom telling me about all of the new variations of coffee she could try and how we could now buy virtually any book we wanted. I had never been to New York or any other cultural center, so in my mind, this was exactly what Winston-Salem was missing out on. Seeing successful, charming New Yorkers in You've Got Mail hang out in Starbucks and Fox & Sons affirmed this belief, and I felt like I finally had access to a richer world. Watching You've Got Mail in 2018 still stirs those feelings. I also rewatched The Devil Wears Prada recently and was struck by how much of a pre-recession movie it is. I can't believe all the razzing Anne Hathaway gets for taking a job that is not 100% in line with her interests, even though it is explicit that it could help her career in the long run. It's peak, you went to college, so now the world will give you whatever you want. I watched it when it came out and was fully on her friend's side. On my 2018 watch, I was Team Anne Hathaway all the way.
Take the job you gotta take.
Well, I hate The Devil Wears Prada.
I was just going to say I hated The Devil Wears. I
Except
read it, too.
Except for Emily Blunt.
Yeah, Emily Blunt is great in it.
Amazing. That was her big entree.
Yeah, I know everybody came away from that loving Meryl Streep, but I just remember being like, Emily Blunt is the best part of this movie.
I don't like to hate on Anne Hathaway, so I won't do it. But there's something about The Devil Wears Prada where I was like, it ticked all the boxes of my least favorite things and like put them in a blender and was like, here you go, sit and eat it. And
I was it's been a second since I watched it, but I kind of like it. Can you explain the hate for it? Because I also don't remember how it ends.
I feel like it's like the tertiary characters are good and like interesting and well acted and written. And then Anne Hathaway is just kind of like a Mary Sue where it's like she's this person working for this like crazy boss. If I remember correctly. It's like you have to like humanize Anna Wintour by showing that like she is sad sometimes too.
But does she end up being like a kind person? I don't remember that being the takeaway. It's like it acknowledges that she's sad, but does she end up like being redeemed at all?
I remember there were like some. I just remember there were a lot. Like the love interest was very boring. And
yeah, the love interest is like the least. Yeah, I can't.
For
even
me,
remember.
It's like so uninteresting to like watch a movie about the fashion industry. Like, it's just for some reason it's
as
time
we've
you
said.
Can
it's
never
how do you feel
back.
About Zoolander?
That I will watch a parody for of anything.
There was a whole series of like 2000. I think exactly what this Nightcaller is talking about is like that these 2000s movies that were about being like a career girl who's like out in the big city to make a ton of money and like smash the glass ceiling at a terrible company and do so by like buying a lot of name brand things.
Yeah, so she can be accepted by her peers. Oh, but Stanley Tucci is so good in it.
He's really good in it. So that one.
I love Stanley Tucci.
He's good in everything, though. I mean, it's like.
So that one's like the best one. But then there was like Confessions of a Shopaholic, which some people like. And
but does she have a job in
that?
The
Nanny Diaries. This was like peak people being like, let's adapt
chick lit. This is so 2005. This is like so peak aughts.
But there's something about some of these movies that make me feel like they like think women are really dumb, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, here's what women like. They
well,
like
this was
fashion.
Like, when, like that was when the term chick lit became a thing, was like four books like Devil Wears Prada.
There are enough good things in that movie. I don't know. I mean, I know people like it, but for me, it's never been. I watched it once and I've never felt the need to like revisit it.
Life is short.
If you love The Devil Wears Prada, or
give us a shout,
the Mary Poppins franchise, or the alternate universe Mary Poppins that might be in the center of the Night Call Venn diagram, Bed Knobs and Broomsticks, which also has an animated part,
give
us a call.
They do it. I hope they do a sequel to Mary Poppins Returns called Mary Poppins Forever.
Okay, you guys, we have a Night Call. And this is kind of a corrections desk night call. This comes from Hannah. Hi, Night Call. I'm sure other people have pointed this out. They have. But according to the Waffle House website, 25 states have Waffle House locations in them, including Colorado and Pennsylvania, neither of which I would consider southern states. Never having been to a Waffle House, I've lived in Washington, New York, and Alaska. I guess IHOP would be considered the Waffle House equivalent in non-Waffle House states. Or Denny's? Maybe Sherry's? By the way, I've never heard of Sherry's.
Sherry's!
Okay, Sherry's. Literally, my only interaction with Waffle House comes from a John Green short story, so I have almost zero frame of reference. I have heard of the Waffle House Index, though, which is a FEMA rating system that categorizes storms based on whether or not the Waffle House in the area is open. I'm off to find some waffles now because I'm hungry. Happy haunting! So that is like a very strange thing that the Waffle House Weather Index exists.
Yeah.
I mean, but this goes back to, I will explain Sherry's for you for a second. I mean, it is basically just a diner. Like, it's a Denny's-style diner. It feels like more 70s. Like, at least when I was a kid, it felt very, even at the time in the 90s, it felt 70s. But it's just a diner. But it's in Washington, and I remember Sherry's being the one place in town when there was this freak blizzard and all the power went out for like 2 weeks. And Sherry's was one of the few places in town that was like on a generator, like a public place on a generator that you could go to if you wanted to. So like that kind of holds water, like being the light in the storm.
Yeah, FEMA's like, if Sherry's is open.
Again, this is why 24-hour establishments are the best. 24-hour diners.
I mean, we're missing, like, was Dupar's 24 hours? I thought it was.
No, it's only stayed open until 3 at a certain point. We are losing some diners, but we're getting some new ones.
Spots.
Norm's is moving to Ventura Boulevard.
Oh, I love Norm's.
What about Cafe 50s?
Cafe 50s on Vermont's still open. We could talk about this part all day. First of all, I just want to say, IHOP is not as good as Waffle House.
No, IHOP is not great. Do you guys prefer Denny's or IHOP?
Denny's, but I don't really like either of them.
There's an IHOP kind of near me that I go to more than the Denny's. But
I just find
same.
It strange because of all the things that are that you could like eat at a restaurant or make at home. It's like it's so easy to make pancakes.
What?
Right. I mean? It's so easy to make pancakes. Yeah. They even had a spray, Molly, that looked like Ready Whip, and you could just spray it into the pan, and it was like not bad at all. No, it was good. It blew my mind.
It's
I was
the
like,
International
how is this
House
this
of
food
Pancakes.
Is the easiest thing to
it's
cook
just not
home.
As good as Waffle House in terms of 24-hour diners.
Yeah. I like the no frills aspect of Waffle House a lot. Village Inn was the chain in Iowa and Perkins. Perkins was 24 hours, and their specialty was muffins. So you could always go get a muffin there.
You always bring it back to
Connecticut
muffins.
The muffin
the
boom.
The Connecticut muffin.
Yeah, this is the Iowa muffin, but yeah.
It wasn't at all open 24 hours. In fact, it had like really limited hours, if I recall, because everything in New England does. But I always loved Friendly's. Friendly's is like
Friendly's.
Such a good diner, man.
I've only been to one Friendly's, and I think it was in Hawaii, weirdly.
Really?
There's a Friendly's in Honolulu, I think.
I went to a diner, a 24-hour diner in Vegas with Emily called the Peppermill.
Ooh. Oh, the Peppermill is like the
greatest. Isn't everything
24-hour
in Vegas? Like, there's
yes,
nothing that closes in
Las
Vegas.
This was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. What'd
you
have?
The clubs close. That's why
yeah, some things do close. I mean, this was, I don't even remember what I had, but I had a great time. That's what I had.
Oh, shit, Molly. What was the place in Seekonk, Massachusetts that was a
24-hour? I can't think of the name.
There was a really great diner in Seekonk. I think it was in Seekonk, right? It was nothing in Rhode Island, I think, was 24
hours. Yeah, I can't remember.
But there was this one in Seekonk that we would drive to our senior year that was a really good 24-hour diner.
What are your favorite night callers? If you have a favorite 24-hour diner you'd like to alert us to, or a non-24-hour diner.
Or a 24-hour anything.
Give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT.
We did get several emails pointing out that there are Waffle Houses in non-Southern states. So I was thinking of that more. As I said, I think when I said it originally, it was more a heart feeling, more a spiritual feeling, less a factual feeling. So
I think we said letter of the law, spirit of the law.
We can, So we can. I will acknowledge that I was wrong about that. However, because I've discussed this with several people off the pod, just like is Missouri a southern state? And I think I've really come to the conclusion that if you had slavery, you have to be a southern state forever.
Wow.
Whether or not you like it, whether or not you feel like you're really Midwestern, if you had.
Wasn't it this is the Missouri Compromise that we have talked about?
Yeah.
This is the whole thing. I believe it is like sort of was up for debate where Missouri was going to go. But from what I have heard from Missourians, it's the Midwest.
Yeah,
and
they wish. They wish.
I'll give it to them. There's been some discussion of like, are we too coastally elite, even though Emily is obviously... you know, has spent a lot of time in the Midwest.
Guys, I'm the only one of us who've been to Branson, so.
Exactly. So I think we should honor the folks from Missouri being whatever they want. And also,
if you can go to Waffle House, do.
Exactly.
Go to Waffle House. This is the main takeaway.
Waffle House, please sponsor Night Call so we can go to Waffle House all the time and it can be our headquarters, our corporate flagship.
I'd love to report.
Well, I think that does it for today, guys.
Yeah. We'll see you guys next week. As always, give us a night call, 1-240-46-NIGHT. Follow us on Facebook, Night Call Podcast, Twitter at Night Call Pod, and Instagram at Night Call Podcast. Email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
And if it's not too much to ask, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you listen to it on.
And tell us your favorite Christmas songs that will make us rethink how much we like Christmas.
This is the longest goodbye, you guys. We are the pod.
We are the pod.
See you next week.
We are the pod.